It's a mad March, and there's nowhere more crazy about college basketball than Kansas City. From the Sprint Center to Municipal Auditorium, up and down the Power and Light District to living rooms everywhere, college hoops are here. I'm Brian Ellison, and today on Central Standard, we tip off a conversation about the tournaments that are dominating our airwaves, namely the NCAA tournament that starts today and includes games later this week here in town, but also a tournament that gets less press but has been in town longer, much longer, the NAIA, whose championship game is tonight. We'll hear about the sports history here in Kansas City, the financial impact of all this on the region, and, of course, the games themselves. It's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Paul Brown. Russia calls the expected tax on Cypriot bank accounts an act of forceful expropriation and a violation of European Union principles. Russians hold some of the largest bank accounts in Cyprus, those likely to be highly targeted by the tax. And as Terry Schultz reports from Brussels, the issue is raising tensions ahead of a meeting between European Union and Russian officials later this week.
Russia's EU ambassador Vladimir Chizov says a one-time tax on Cypriot deposits to raise rescue funds is not a good decision on either an economic or an ethical basis. Chizov speaks here through an interpreter.
Private property should not be expropriated. This is a forceful solution.
In addition to being dependent on Russian deposits, Cyprus also holds a $3.2 billion Russian loan. Moscow suggests that may now be restructured. In part, Chizov acknowledges, because the Eurogroup failed to consult Russia, as he says had been promised, in the bailout talks.
The situation cannot but make Russia think once again about its next steps.
EU officials say Cyprus is not on the agenda of a meeting in Moscow Thursday and Friday. Chizov says it will be discussed. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
Syria's biggest opposition coalition has elected a new leader. Hisham Marwa is a spokesman for the Syrian National Coalition.
According to the bylaws, the constitution of the coalition, Mr. Hito is the new prime minister.
He says Hassan Hito, a little-known U.S.-educated information technology specialist, will lead the coalition. Hito immediately said there's no place for dialogue with the Assad regime the rebels are trying to unseat. As the leadership choice played out in Istanbul, Turkey, the rebel group also denies Syrian government claims that rebels used chemical weapons in Aleppo to kill more than 15 people. Neither claim has been independently verified. 10 years after the start of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, and with U.S. combat troops now gone, a series of car bombs and suicide attacks ripped through several neighborhoods in Baghdad today. More than 50 people have been killed, and officials say at least 200 are hurt. Sectarian violence has been on the increase. The BBC's Jim Muir reports so far no one has claimed responsibility for today's attacks.
It was clearly a coordinated campaign, with a series of bomb explosions going off and other attacks being launched during the morning rush hour in mainly Shiite-populated areas in and around Baghdad. Most of the 10 or so explosions were caused by car bombs, but police said at least one was carried out by a suicide bomber. Several attacks were also launched by groups of gunmen. No faction has said it was responsible for the attacks, but the Al-Qaeda-affiliated umbrella group calling itself the Islamic State of Iraq has in recent months been stepping up its attempts to revive the insurgency.
The BBC's Jim Muir in Baghdad. This is NPR News. U.S. housing starts are at their highest level since mid-2008. The latest Commerce Department report also shows construction permits up, another sign of a continuing recovery, however slow, in the real estate and construction markets. A federal court has struck down a Missouri law exempting employers from offering mandatory birth control insurance coverage on religious or moral grounds. NPR's Julie Ravner reports the ruling declares federal law takes precedence over contradictory state laws.
The Missouri legislature enacted the law over the veto of Democratic Governor Jay Nixon last fall. It would have allowed insurers to sell insurance policies without contraceptive coverage if individuals or employers said that birth control violates their, quote, moral, ethical, or religious beliefs. But District Court Judge Audrey Fleissig said the state law conflicted with the contraceptive coverage requirement of the federal Affordable Care Act. That's not allowed under the U.S. Constitution, which makes federal law superior. Judge Fleisig, however, was careful to say she was not taking any position on the merits of the federal policy. Dozens of other lawsuits have been filed challenging that federal requirement. Julie Rovner, NPR News.
Spring begins tomorrow, but there are plenty of places you wouldn't know it. A big storm is dumping rain, sleet, and snow in New York, and forecasters say northern New England may get as much as 15 inches of snow. To the west, a wintry mix of rain and snow continues across the Ohio and Tennessee valleys and into the central Appalachians, and heavy snow showers persist in Minnesota, while there have been near whiteout conditions in the Dakotas. I'm Paul Brown, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org.
We've got barbecue, of course, and fountains. There's the Plaza and the American Royal. There's Harry Truman and the 18th and Vine Jazz District. But among those historic and iconic contributions that Kansas City has made to America, there really should be another, the college basketball tournament. Good morning. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Long before March Madness was a registered trademark, Kansas City was practicing it in the first national college basketball championship happening right here at Municipal Auditorium back in 1937. Tonight, the 76th champion of that tournament will be crowned. Who do you like? Southwestern Assemblies of God University of Texas or Georgetown College of Kentucky? We'll talk about that, about the NAIA, present and past. That's a little later in our program. But first, that other tournament, the one down the street at the Sprint Center and in locations all over the country, actually starting tonight in Dayton, Ohio. Here to talk about the NCAA and the local teams involved and its impact on our community, our KCUR's Greg Eklund, who covers sports for us and for other NPR stations around the country. Welcome, Greg.
Good morning, Brian. Are you going to be playing fight songs for other teams as well?
We will, not just for the University of Missouri, we promise. And also joining us, Kathy Nelson, who's president and CEO of the Kansas City Sports Commission and Foundation. Welcome to you, Kathy.
Thank you. Good morning.
So a big week around here for college sports and including for local teams, right, Greg?
It really is. I mean, Kansas is going to be playing in Kansas City again. It's an encore performance for both Kansas and Kansas State after a tremendous weekend in which they met for the championship game of the Big 12 Conference Championship last weekend. Now they do it all again with six other teams from around the country this time, because this is what they refer to as the big dance, the NCAA men's basketball tournament.
We'll talk about that tournament. Kathy, how important is it to have teams like KU and K-State playing right here in Kansas City?
Well, it's very important when you look at our economic impact here in the city to have those fans here spending their dollars in food and beverage and shopping around our community. And some of them do elect to spend the night here in our hotel room. So it's very much of an impact. You know, we, of course, welcome those out-of-town teams because those are the ones as well spending the night in the hotel rooms, eating and dining in the establishments as well.
So it has a big impact. Greg, let's talk a little bit about these, all three of the teams, KU, K-State, and, of course, Missouri, which will have to travel to play their games.
They're going to Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah. So let's heard their fight song. So let's start with Mizzou. They're a number nine seed, not quite getting the rankings that KU and K-State.
I think if Missouri had a better performance in the SEC tournament last weekend, that Missouri would have been a third team here in Kansas City. But with Ole Miss winning the SEC tournament and the automatic berth to the tournament, it was Ole Miss that was planted for Kansas City in the pod system, as they like to call it. And unfortunately for Mizzou fans, they'll have to travel a little bit if they want to see their Tigers. It's also probably, even though there's already a lot of madness around here for KU and K-State, considering the spillover from the Big 12 tournament, it would have been at another level if Missouri had been here, too.
Well, right. Is this one of those moments where Missouri regrets having left the Big 12, moving to the SEC? Does that look like a mistake at this point?
I don't think so. I mean, for Missouri's sake, they had their own reasons for leaving the Big 12, but as the banners and everything that was exclaiming around the city last weekend, this is Big 12 country.
Of course, Missouri suffering a
pretty bad upset defeat in last year's tournament. But Colorado State, who they're playing on Thursday, actually has lost in the first round of the tournament themselves the last few times.
Colorado State has a coach that's familiar to Big 12 fans because Larry Eustace used to be the basketball coach at Iowa State, and he's now the head coach at Colorado State. Between stops, he also coached at Southern Mississippi, and he's been here at Sprint Center in Kansas City coaching when he was bringing his Southern Mississippi team in. So there's a familiar face there. It's going to be interesting to see what Missouri team shows up. It's a team that could look good for 38 minutes, but in the last 2 minutes of a game, it has been their tendency to somehow let a game slip away.
So, Kathy Nelson, from the perspective of the Kansas City Sports Commission, you've had a big couple of weeks. You have not just the NCAA tournament and the NAIA tournament that we'll be talking about, but also the Big 12 tournament last week, the MIAA before that. How do we get all these tournaments here? Why is Kansas City such a great place for college sports?
Well, we're very fortunate. The NAI and the MIAA both make their homes here for their conference offices. And the NAI, you know, their headquarters are right downtown across the street from Sprint Center. That doesn't necessarily mean that we will house that tournament, but we're very fortunate to work very closely with those groups. Big 12, we're very, again, fortunate that they are here in Kansas City. They're here through 2016, and we are looking forward to what that looks like for years beyond. With the tournament this week, our organization, along with city leaders, the Sprint Center, and our Convention and Visitors Association, work to put in a bid. It's a bid process. So those come out every few years for years down the road. So we actually had bid on this regional a couple years ago and were awarded this tournament.
And what good does it do the city to host these tournaments? It seems like it's a massive operation. You have to close streets. Why is this of benefit?
Well, first, economics. You know, for the tournament this current week with the NCAA, it's probably a little over $9 million we'll see that will flow through our community, and that would not be here if this tournament was not here. Big 12 last week was, again, almost $9 million in economic impact. It also puts us on a national map. When people think college basketball, they truly look towards Kansas City. This will be the 29th time that we've hosted a regional here. And wow, people know there's no one else that compares to that. I think Philadelphia maybe, and Greg, being the expert with stats, would probably tell you, I think Philadelphia is maybe 27. So by far, Kansas City is known for college basketball.
I could tell you, Brian, that as much as competition will heat up on the court later on this week, there is a lot of behind-the-scenes competition for getting an NCAA regional in those years ahead.
Yeah, and so what are the possibilities for the years ahead? Excuse me. A lot of folks talk about a Final Four in Kansas City. Are we going to see that, Kathy?
I'm not sure that we would be able to host a Final Four. That definitely comes back to facilities. But we know that we're set up with Sprint Center now and Municipal and hosting things like that. We are very actively and aggressively pursuing things. We're at the mercy of the NCAA as far as when their bid processes come out for not only basketball but for other events, for championships.
What is it we're lacking in facilities? Hotel space, is that the issue?
For a Final Four?
Yeah.
Probably most of them are played in domed settings now.
So even the Sprint Center, even though it's a great facility, it's new, it's still not big enough for the Final
Absolutely
Four.
Absolutely not.
Well, there are even some domes around the country that don't meet the minimum seating requirement that the NCAA has to host a Final Four. And it's not just the dome situations, it's the amount of hotel rooms and all the other things that are required to host a Final Four.
I've always thought that watching a basketball game in one of those stadiums from that far away from the court must be sort of a strange experience.
Well, if you've been to a Final Four, you'll see that they have huge video screens at the center of the court now. So the people in the upper part of the stadiums are probably watching more of the video screens with the live players just below them than they are of the live players below them.
Well, so speaking of those players and of national perspective, KU, obviously the number one overall seed in the tournament.
No, Louisville's the overall number one
KU
seed.
KU number one seed on one of the brackets of the tournament. Tell us what do you like about KU this year, Greg?
Well, they just are a great defensive team, and a lot of their offense is predicated off how well they play defensively. And they just are a team that continues to rebuild with raw talent, and somehow Bill Self molds them into a solid team, which they are right now.
You know, joking about the number one overall seed, the number one team in the country has changed just about every week or two this year, right?
And that makes for an interesting tournament because although there are, you have your seeding system, this is a year in which you're probably going to see your brackets pretty well messed up because I don't think a lot of those upper seeds will frankly make it into the later rounds.
Yeah, nobody knows who should be where.
I mean, Gonzaga is a number one seed this year, but really, how good is Gonzaga? They've proven that they've beaten some good teams. They beat K-State earlier this year, but are they worthy of a number one seed? We're going to find out.
So KU's claim to fame, one of their claims anyway, is a bunch of strong seniors on the team, right?
They do. That's really what their core group is this year because they almost had to rebuild the team that made it all the way to the championship game last year. But through the experience and the coaching, they've made themselves into a solid team this year.
Now, K-State obviously lost to KU in the Big 12 championship. What does K-State have going for it?
K-State has a team that Bruce Weber had inherited from Frank Martin after Frank Martin left for South Carolina. And Bruce Weber has done a real nice job. He was coach of the year in the Big 12 this year of molding to according to his philosophies. He inherited a solid group as he did when he was at Illinois. And Bruce Weber coached an Illinois team all the way to the championship game against North Carolina a few years ago.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking basketball, specifically the NCAA tournament and its presence here in Kansas City. I want to invite our listeners into the conversation. If you attended the Big 12 conference tournament last weekend, or maybe you're planning to attend NCAA this weekend, give us a call. Tell us what you think about basketball here in Kansas City. How is the college basketball experience in this town these days? What's great about it? Maybe what could be better? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. It's 235-2888. You can also post your thoughts on our Facebook page or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Tournament, Greg, up to 68 teams this year. It's four different play-in games.
They don't like to say that term, but
they call them the first round.
The first four. You have the final four. And it's the first four in Dayton. Yes.
Are you buying it? Do these teams deserve to be in the national tournament?
Well, you're always going to have teams that feel they should be in the field. And there was talk of maybe even expanding the tournament to 128 teams. I'm glad they didn't go in that direction.
Yeah.
I like the fact that, they were. I wish it would have stayed at 64. And that way I'm a traditionalist. But with 68, I could buy into that a little bit better than something like 128. That's crazy.
Though I suppose that would be more opportunities for Kansas City to host games, right, Kathy?
Possibly, yes.
Greg, who isn't in the tournament this year? Anyone who should be?
Well, from the Big 12, the team that maybe had the greatest talent but perhaps underachieved was Baylor. There were teams around the country. Travis Relaford's brother, who plays for Alabama, has a beef because Alabama was left out. Tennessee was left out in the SEC. So you're always going to have your teams. And the defending champion, Kentucky, is not in it this year. So there's going to be a new champion because the defending champ did not make it.
So here's a comment we got on Facebook, and this is one that Jenny probably did not expect us to read on the air. She says, I have zero interest in sports. I don't think I'm alone in the public radio listening world. I'm reading it, Kathy, because I think it brings up a good question. Why should people care about sports in Kansas City, even if they don't think they care about basketball? What's important here?
Well, and I think that when you look at this event through the month of March, we truly look at this as a franchise for our city. And so when you think about what it takes as a team on the court, we look at what it takes as a team off the court. So we're using this as basketball right now, but we are now very excited about how we work so well with City Hall. We work with the Convention and Visitor Association. So now maybe events outside of sports, when they come to our city, we know we have a great team in place now and we know how to work events and things like that. So as you look at Kansas City overall, it's a great way to help the economic impact but make us stronger as a city to host other things.
And what other things could grow out of this? I mean, what sort of events do you see as the next steps for Kansas City in sports?
There's all kinds of conventions that could come to Kansas City and come back to Kansas City that aren't necessarily sports focused. Of course, I'm focused primarily on sports, but the Sprint Center can open up and do other things, primarily the different conventions, But
sure.
You know, there's, gosh, well, I work with Olympic trials and things like that, which I guess is all back to sports. But.
Sure. But then you also have, and I know this from working on an article that I write for Sports Travel Magazine, not just the NCAA tournament, but for football bowl games. You lure in visitors, and you hope that even the individual visitors who come to your city would be impressed enough with your city to perhaps consider that city for another visit somewhere down the road.
Yeah. That's so true. You know, last week we had 80-degree temperatures, and we heard so many people from West Virginia and from TCU that had never been here before making a statement, I'll come back.
And people who had never been to the Power and Light District who had a chance to experience something like that and may consider maybe coming back and taking in that part of the city as part of their visit the next time around.
I think a lot of people pay attention to sports for the stories of individual players and teams, even if they don't care as much about the outcomes of particular games. I want to ask this of our guests as well, but let me ask those of you who are listening, is there a particular team, a particular individual story that is the most compelling to you in this year's tournament, either the NCAA tournament, maybe even the NAIA tournament, if you're following that? Give us a call at 816-235-2888 and let us know what story you find compelling. Greg Eklund, is there a story of this year's tournament that comes to mind for you?
Well, outside of Kansas and Kansas State, I would say the lightning rod right now is this player for Ole Miss, which is going to be in the first game of the day between Ole Miss and Wisconsin, is this number 22 for Mississippi, Marshall Henderson.
Now, Marshall Henderson's gotten some good press or bad press, depending on who's doing the talking.
Depending on the point of view, because he's one of those who he might make a gesture to the opposing team's bench. And as we saw from the Big 12 tournament, maybe the officials might crack down on that during the tournament, but he's one who certainly speaks his mind and shows what's on his mind when he's on the basketball court.
As someone who works at the scorer's table at the NAIA tournament, I will say I don't approve of standing on the scorer's table and dancing in any way. So Kathy, you've been working a lot with the Sprint Center, I imagine, over these last few weeks, these several basketball tournaments. Give us just a quick bit of the flavor of what goes into getting that place ready to host a tournament like this.
Well, I've heard from many of their employees that they sleep there overnight leading into this. You know, for the Big 12 basketball, the floor has to go down. So they store that the court there at Sprint Center. To prepare for the NCAA, the Big 12 basketball court comes up on Sunday, and the new court from the NCAA goes down.
Why do they need a different court?
Greg might be able to answer that, but that's just an NCAA rule. They fly that court in, and it's stored here for a couple days, and then that Big 12 court goes up. They're very particular.
The word there is particular because the NCAA has its own operations manual on how to conduct a regional, and this manual is followed to a T, as Kathy could probably attest.
That is very true.
Does that mean, is that for consistency? I mean, are they trying to create the same experience no matter what arena you're in?
I think that's what it's all about, trying to, in even the most subtle ways, create what they feel is an even playing field for a 68-team tournament.
I see. So so
no matter how partisan the crowd may be,
right,
when they file in, at least everything on the court has to be the same. And that's even for something as subtle as taking a cup out to the basketball court. We in the media are not allowed to take a cup that has any kind of advertisement on it unless it's the corporate sponsor of the NCAA.
Fascinating.
And even inside of Sprint Center, Big 12, we did not need to cover all of their sponsors. This week, all of those sponsorships would be covered with black draping.
Unless, of course, those are sponsors of the NCAA.
Correct.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. So I guess that raises the question, and maybe this provides a good segue to the second half of our show, and we'll be talking about a different organization, the NAIA. Does this only prove that the NCAA tournament has become very much about money?
Well, it's big time. This is the event that garners the biggest television contract that the NCAA has. That television contract pays more than 90% of the office operations of the NCAA headquarters in Indianapolis. So this is big money.
Yeah, they need this event is what they're counting on.
Absolutely.
And not only that, when you hear about, such as right now, that there has been an NCAA Division II regional that just concluded in Topeka, the money from the TV contract helps pay for the expenses of the other championships on the other division levels. And all of that comes mainly from the Division I contract.
Even other sports, right?
Absolutely,
correct.
Yes.
So if you're involved in wrestling or gymnastics or some other sport that you feel like it's not getting the attention it deserves, you should at least look to basketball as something that's maybe making the championships for your sport possible.
Absolutely. Yep. And even moving forward, the NCAA, when we go to bid on events like this, I've heard rumor, and we'll find this out in April, but when you go to now bid on maybe a basketball tournament, they're looking at packaging that. So it could be that if your city hosts a regional for Division I, you may end up also hosting a Division II tennis and Division III golf, because they are looking at that funding model.
So last question. I'm going to give both Kathy and Greg a chance to answer this. Their pick for the winner of the NCAA tournament. A reminder to our listeners that Mizzou plays Thursday at 8:20 in Lexington, Kentucky. K-State plays Friday here at the Sprint Center at 2:10. KU plays at 8:50 at the Sprint Center. Maybe one of those teams, maybe some other team. Who's going to win it all? Kathy Nelson.
Oh, I guess since I just took my Big 12 hat off, I'll have to go with KU.
Boy, that is the most reluctant tournament prediction I've ever heard. And KCUR's Greg Eklin?
Oh, my gosh. This is not something, and I'm not one to fill out a bracket, because I am from the viewpoint that I truly enjoy the tournament. But if you were to put me on the spot and throw me under a bus, I'm going to say Indiana.
Indiana. It's going to be number 14 seed Harvard for all of it. Just watch and see. Stick around. We're coming back in just a second with more about basketball, but we're changing gears to talk about the NAIA, the other tournament, the older tournament in Kansas City. Their championship games tonight at Municipal, and we'll have some who have been to that tournament many times, including someone who's been to the last 63 in a row. You're listening to Central Standard here on KCUR. You heard the KU fight song there. We've been talking about the NCAA tournament here on Central Standard, Big 12 tournament. But there's another tournament in town. It's been here for most of the last 76 years. In fact, Dr. James Naismith, the inventor of basketball, is the one who started it here. And that's the NAIA tournament, and it's Division I men's championship game. That's tonight here at Municipal Auditorium. Joining us to talk about the NAIA are Jim Carr, who is the president and CEO of the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics. Welcome to you, Jim.
Thanks, Brian.
And also Larry Lady, who is commissioner of the NAIA's Heart of America Athletic Conference and also the national supervisor of officials for the NAIA for many sports. Welcome to you, Larry.
Thank you, Brian.
KCUR's Greg Eklund and Kansas City Sports Commission's Kathy Nelson are also still with us. Jim Carr, 30 games down in this year's tournament, one to go. How has the tournament gone this year?
It's been great. We're fortunate every year to have some great games. Teams come in from all over the country, 32 teams, and battle it out over a one-week period of time, and so it's just a lot of fun to see these young people pouring everything they have on the court.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize there's 31 games in 6 days. They take Sunday off, but all this happens between Wednesday and Tuesday. Larry Lady, you've been sitting at courtside for all 30 of those games. What's the experience been like this year?
It's been incredible. I think particularly on Friday, where we had 8 games that were very hotly contested, extremely close games, well played and well coached, and Saturday's quarterfinals were nothing less. And then everybody knows what happened last night, an exciting end to the nightcap game.
Well, so just in case there's someone who doesn't know what happened last night, we had the semifinals, in another conference might be called the Final Four, but we don't call it that, right? The last four teams in the tournament battled it down to 2 last night, producing a championship result. Greg Eklund, what do folks have to look forward to tonight?
Well, the thing that distinguishes the NAIA is that no matter what level of basketball it is, you still have a team that is, as these guys have mentioned, over a short period of time, gone through a grueling schedule, and they're going to have the thrill of winning a championship. And you're going to have a team that is in the finals for the first time against a team that has been there before, has been in the finals 4 times previous, but it's a completely new team. And either way, it's going to be the thrill of winning the championship and being awarded. Is the Naismith Trophy going to be there tonight? James Naismith Trophy that was first awarded in 1938 is going to be presented symbolically to the winner tonight.
Which, let's talk a little bit about the history of the NAIA, and I want to invite Kathy Nelson to this conversation too, because there's hardly a bigger figure in sports, at least in basketball, than the inventor, James Naismith, has these ties to Kansas City and to Kansas City history. How important is that, Kathy?
Well, when you look at college basketball in Kansas City, that's a huge deal. You know, as a young girl, my dad took me to the NAIA tournament, and my brothers and I would run up above at Municipal, and we'd have peanut butter sandwiches and Shasta Pop because we didn't have any way to keep that cold, but you were allowed to bring that in. And now, you know, my entire career, especially in sports, I've been to many games and produced many, and I think Kansas City should be very proud in that history.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking about, you mentioned the hotels and so on, but, you know, the NAIA brings 32 teams into town with all their fans for a week every single year.
And the other thing with that is those fans tend to stay. We see them because it is a long tournament. It's one of the toughest tournaments to win in any collegiate sport. So it's great that we see those fans come in again, spending their dollars in our community. A lot of them may rent a car and take a day trip if they're not playing the following day. So it's a lot of fun for us, and it is a big economic boost.
Jim Carr, I want to talk a little bit about the NAIA of today in a little bit, but walk us back a little through that history. I mean, the tournament's been here in Kansas City most of that time, and it's seen a lot of landmarks during that.
Yeah, excuse me. As you mentioned, Brian, that James Naismith was one of the founders with Frank Kramer and Mill Liston, who was the AD out at Baker. They started in a garage basically in 1937. They were trying to figure out, what do we do with this new auditorium, municipal auditorium in Kansas City? What kind of events could we bring there? And so they started with 8 teams in that first year, and then the next year grew to 32. We've been at 32 ever since. People that come down and watch the tournaments, not many like Larry who've been to 63 straight, but folks who come down just marvel at the format, and that we have all 32 teams typically staying in one or two hotels, essentially living together for a week. But then when they get on the court, they battle it out, and then off the court create some great friendships, and the coaches are a very collegial group, and it's a great atmosphere.
Want to invite our fans to share their experiences. Maybe you're like Kathy. Maybe you remember going to this tournament as a kid with your peanut butter sandwiches and Shasta running around in Municipal. Maybe you've got your own memories. Maybe you were there this week. Give us a call and share your experiences of the NAIA at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard.org. Kathy, I think one of the challenges that the NAIA must face is being in town at the same time as some of these other tournaments. How do you, as someone who's promoting all kinds of sports in Kansas City, continue to lift up organizations like the NAIA?
Well, typically they don't play the same week. This year it just happened to be that way. But I think as a city, you know, we want to make sure that they feel welcome. They're very important to us. This year we were fortunate the Big 12 was able to jump in and offer up, if you have your Big 12 ticket, go down. It was at a half off at the NAI. Also, you know, little things like street pole banners. Wanted to make sure they know that all basketball fans are welcome, so we specifically put street pole banners outside of Municipal welcoming. Then I noticed this morning the NAIA banners are up on the streets right outside Municipal, and they look beautiful.
That's great. Kathy, I know you have to get down to the State of the City address, but I really appreciate your being here with us this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Larry Lady, when did you attend your first NAIA tournament?
Well, it was 1951. My grandfather took me there, and I tell people I was 2 years old, but that's a stretch.
we'll go with that.
I was, when Kathy was talking about running around upstairs and that sort of thing, I also remember the Frosty Malts back in those days. I don't think anybody in this room was here at that time, but they had Carnival Barker-type guys running around, hollering about the Frosty Malts. Get your Frosty Malts right here. It was a great experience for a young kid, from a farm kid from central Kansas. And I started at that time, and my grandfather and I stayed at the YMCA in bunk beds. I think we paid $2 a night each. Then in later years, we stayed at the old Dixon Hotel, ate breakfast in the Pioneer Grill. And I have people all the time ask me if the Pioneer Grill's still there, if the Dixon Hotel is. And, of course, now it's a skyscraper 30-story building sitting on that corner. So it's a great history, and memories were created for me as a young child.
Greg Eklund, you've produced and written, you've reported stories for NPR about the NAIA tournament. What are some of the memories and the stories that really make this what it is for
well,
you?
Well, some of the figures of the players. I mean, just in the last few weeks, we have heard about Dennis Rodman's trip to North Korea. Well, he went to an NAIA school and played at Kemper Arena in the NAIA tournament. So there have been some notable names throughout the years. Another one I'll throw out, Larry, you may remember, he may have preceded your first visit at the NAIA tournament, but former Iowa State coach Johnny Orr was in the NAIA tournament in the late 40s, and a lot of those schools that were NAIA have since gone to Division I, but there have been still a lot of NAIA schools that are repeat visitors that have had notable athletes that have come through Kansas City.
John Wooden, the famous UCLA coach, obviously a towering figure in the NAIA, right?
Oh, there's great stories about John, of course, and the NAIA breaking the color barrier, and John Wooden's refusal to come because his players could not sit down and eat with the team, could not stay in the hotel with the team. And that, I think, really marked the turn for the NAIA when we welcomed people of color, players of color, to come to the tournament.
And Brian, I had a chance a few years ago to spend a day with Coach Wooden, and he talked over and over about that being really the signal event of his career. You know, of course, he went on to win a lot of NCAA championships, but what he was able to do socially or from the other perspective, to bring Clarence Walker into our tournament in the late 1940s was way ahead of its time and something we're very proud of.
Yeah, and that refusal to participate if he was not able to have everyone participate is really
important. Yeah, that first year, in I believe it was 47, the NAIA was not integrated as a tournament, and so Coach Wooden, even though they qualified, said, well, if Clarence Walker can't play, then my team's not coming. But fortunately, the next year, he had essentially the same team, and the NAIA had thought long and hard and worked with the city of Kansas City to make sure that Clarence had a place to stay, and from all accounts he was treated very well, and it was a great, not only for the NAIA, but just a great great time and a great piece of history for Kansas City.
Well, I wonder if that isn't something that that actually is a distinctive about the NAIA, that it is about something. Am I stretching to say it's about something more than the game?
No, I think you're absolutely right. That's one reason we started our Champions of Character program, and I heard you talk a little bit earlier about the entertainment model that essentially has become such at the highest levels of the NCAA anyway, and the antics of people like Marshall Henderson. And that's, I think, a real opportunity and a niche for the NAIA is to say we're not about the entertainment model, that college athletics needs to be embedded in the mission, educational mission of our institutions. And so we work really hard with our member institutions to make sure that's the case. We, I guess, fortunately or unfortunately, don't have the $700 million contract that the NCAA has. So there's some different things at play there. But I do think that most people believe that intercollegiate athletics should be embedded in that educational mission, and so we're doing everything we can to make sure that happens. And maybe Marshall Henderson could come through our Champions of Character program and learn a little bit.
I was going to ask Larry Lady, all the years you've been an official in the NAIA and then the coordinator of officials, what would you do when the player gestures at the other bench or jumps up on the scorer's table?
Well, I would invite him to have a seat in the bench and ask the coach to take care of that. It's just something that doesn't happen very often at the NAIA tournament. I'm not sure we've even had a technical foul this year.
Well,
we did have one
for
on
grasping
a coach.
The rim, and
that's right. For grasping the rim, but not for antics like Jim referred to.
So the teams that have made it through the field, the top two teams, Greg alluded to them a moment ago. We have Georgetown College of Kentucky, the return trip to the finals. They've been there a few times before. But another team, Southwestern Assemblies of God University, SAGU, making their first trip to the finals. What do you know about SAGU, Greg?
To be honest, not that much. From Waxahachie, Texas, and I could tell you, I love that county courthouse in Waxahachie, Texas. And that's the great thing about the NAIA tournament. You learn a lot about some schools and about some teams when they make their first visit here. And as I understand it, this is not only their first chance at winning a title. This is their first tournament appearance.
Yeah. So, and you know, we talked a little bit in the first half of our show about the difficulty of seeding the NCAA tournament. I have to think the seeding of the NAIA tournament is almost impossible when these teams don't play on television, that most people on the committee haven't seen most of the teams play. So this year we have the number 13 seed and the number 6 seed hitting it off in the championship, Jim.
Yeah, I think that's right, Brian. Our Raiders do, a very good job considering they can't see teams play around the country. But we typically do have teams come through the tournament that are unseeded. I remember John Brown a number of years ago and Texas Wesleyan that would have been the equivalent of about a 25 seed if we seeded all the way out to 32. But they, you get here for a week and teams get hot, and over a five-game period, especially with the three-point shot these days. We saw LSU Shreveport, who lost last night, but at times they didn't have anybody bigger than 6'3 on the court, but they were great athletes and shooters and just were hot at the right time.
And a perennial powerhouse in this tournament, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah, they've had a lot of great teams come in. I don't think this was probably one of their better teams, but again, they you get hot at the right time. That's what makes our tournament so exciting. You just never know what's going
to
happen.
Because to win it, you have to win 5 games in 6 days, which actually makes these kids, these students, seem like much more challenged athletes in the process of winning the tournament than even the NCAA players.
That's true. I wanted to comment on the Southwestern Assemblies team. A lot of people may not know this, but Coach Donnie Bostwick won a national championship in the NAIA Division II at Oklahoma Wesleyan about, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. He moved, I think this is his second year at Southwestern. He's just a tremendous individual, and I heard some of his fans talking. I was kind of eavesdropping on a phone call in the concierge room at the hotel, and he was saying, you know, we didn't expect to even get past maybe the second game, but Donnie has done a great job making these people believe that they can win. And I think that's an important matter, to see a coach go to 2 different schools. We've heard all about the NCAA coaches that have had teams in the Final Four, 4 different schools. Donnie Bostwick is in line to win 2 national championships in the NAIA.
It's a pretty crushing defeat last night of Lindsey Wilson College of Kentucky, which I think a lot of folks would have expected to be the winner of that game last night. Donnie Bostwick, here's something that you probably won't see at the NCAA tournament when you're covering that, Greg. During the games, the head coach walks up and down the sideline holding a copy of the Bible. He's holding the Bible for the entire game in his hand, every game so far this tournament.
Now, are you able to listen to his timeouts? Does he read from Scripture during the timeouts?
And in fact, it's a version of the Bible called the translation or the study Bible. It's called God's Game Plan, which I would think must be sort of intimidating to the other teams. Don't you?
I actually talked with Donnie about that a little bit. I'm not sure I have the whole story straight, but a good friend of his who I believe was a coach of another sport at SAGU had cancer and asked Donnie to carry the Bible for him. And I understand that the gentleman is now cancer-free, but Donnie continues to carry that Bible with him everywhere he goes, not just on the bench.
Wow. So I want to ask you about the conference that you are the commissioner of, Larry. You had 3 teams in the tournament, all of whom did fairly well but didn't make it to last night's semifinals. Mid-America Nazarene University, Culver Stockton College, Columbia College, all making it here to the tournament and, in fact, going far.
Right. I'll just correct that a bit. Columbia College is a member of the American
Conference. I'm sorry, but they
Midwest
are here
Conference.
In Missouri, of course.
Evangel
right.
University is our third
there
team in the Heart of America. This is the first time in the history of the tournament that the Heart of America has had 2 teams win 2 games. And we're really excited about that. Mid-America and Culver Stockton both won 2 games. And really, Culver Stockton came very close, very competitive to move on. Mid-America made a big comeback, just didn't have quite enough. But we're really proud of the performance, and we think it's enhanced the stature of our conference in the Division I NAIA. We moved to that division 4 years ago, and it's, I think at this point, we've made a mark in the Division I tournament.
And to follow up on what Larry was saying, Brian, in the NCAA, you have teams playing in regionals, but in the NAIA, to get to the NAIA tournament in Kansas City, you have to win your district. And one of the reasons why two teams from the Heart of America Conference were able to get to Kansas City is because they were in two different districts and each won their respective districts.
You know, they also brought big crowds to the games, which has an impact on the tournament, too.
Yeah, Culver-Stockton, I think, surprised everyone, including me. I talked to their president, Richard Valentine, before the tournament, and I wanted to make sure he was going to be here. And he said, Larry, we're going to make our presence known. And I think Dick decided that it was a great opportunity for his institution to get the name Culver-Stockton out there, and they brought a bunch of people. And that's a long ways from here. That's almost 5 hours, 4.5 hours from downtown Kansas City.
Let's invite our listeners to share their memories, their thoughts about the NAIA. 816-235-2888. What are you looking for in this year's tournament? What do you remember from tournaments past? 816-235-2888. Let's talk to Lois in Prairie Village. Lois, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us, what are you thinking about the NAIA?
Well, what I'm thinking is I'm just thrilled that the NAIA has continued to be in Kansas City for so many years. I was a student at an NAIA-related college way back in the 50s and 60s, and I just wanted to comment on what it's like to go to one of these small schools like Culver-Stockton, like Columbia, and to be able to share in the athletic experience. Most of those schools don't have great big coliseums. They have little gyms where you're sitting down. In my day, you could sit down about 15 feet from the players. And it was a very intimate, very exciting experience. And then to be able to go to class with those players and to know them personally, it's just a kind of a different thing from NCAA Division I. And it's really part of the whole experience of being a student. And these student athletes are really part of the campus life. So it's exciting to see them here playing.
That's great to hear, Lois. Thank you so much for the call. What college was it at you were at?
Well, I attended Phillips University in Enid, Oklahoma, which unfortunately is no longer a university. But we do support students through a scholarship program who go to some of these schools.
That's great. Lois, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Jim Carr?
I covered a game at Phillips University.
Oh, back in the day.
Oklahoma traditionally has been a tough district for the NAIA, and they've had some great NAIA institutions that have come out. And we talked about Georgetown, Kentucky being a multi-time finalist in the NAIA. Another school that traditionally comes out of Oklahoma is Oklahoma Baptist, and there have always been good runs by Oklahoma schools in the NAIA tournament.
Oklahoma Baptist was upset by Mid-America Nazarene in the second round game this year of Olathe. Oklahoma City University made it to the championship a couple years ago, but they lost in the first round to Columbia, Missouri.
Right.
Jim Carr, I you know, Lois's call talking about these small schools where the students are truly student-athletes and maybe students first and athletes
Absolutely.
Second. It's different.
Yeah, I need to get Lois's phone number. We need her on our PR in our PR department. She she captured it very well that, you know, at the NAIA, we like to say every student-athlete matters. It's something that you get at these small schools where they get an opportunity to play sports but also get involved in other aspects of the community. You know, we have student-athletes who sing in the choir or involved in student government. And I think that says a lot about not only NAIA student athletes, but the type of institutions that we have, and it gets back to making sure that athletics is embedded in the educational mission of our institution. So I think Lois certainly had it right, and just appreciate her thoughts.
I have to think that that's sort of what's unique about this national tournament experience too, that many of these players are in fact playing in gyms where you know, there's sort of stands with 100 or 200 people in them, and then they come to municipal auditorium and see the thousands of seats and the full scores table with the digital scoreboard, and it must be a whole different experience, Larry.
Well, I think that's the case. When Lois was talking, I just thought about her image of the student athlete in the NAIA. I've often said over the years NAIA student athletes pay to play. They don't get paid to play. Mm-hmm. Very few of our student athletes are on full rides. They bring dollars to the institution either through loans or grants or from their family, and they are playing for the love of the game. And it's a great opportunity. As Lois pointed out, most of the players playing here in the NAI tournament tonight and all week would not have had an opportunity to continue their athletic career any other way than at the NAIA. And I think that's a tremendous situation for our young men and women.
I'd like to pick up where Lois talked about the arenas from where they play, because oftentimes there are places that seat maybe 500 people, and there is still something about when those players come to Kansas City, stepping into an arena that has to this day still hosted the most national championships on the NAIA level and was the site of the 1957 triple overtime game where Wilt Chamberlain and the Kansas Jayhawks lost to North Carolina. And there's something about that mystique for these athletes from these NAIA institutions to be stepping into an aura that they experience when they step into a municipal auditorium.
We had an email, someone who doesn't include their name, but they say they were an NAIA participant back when the tournament was double elimination. At the game that they won to make it to the tournament, they unveiled a huge banner to celebrate. They walked around their packed field house. Unfortunately, we drew more laughs than cheers because in our exuberance, we made a spelling error. It said Canis City, here we come. So good memories of the NAIA. Jim Carr, the NAIA today is a different organization than it was 75 years ago. It's been in Kansas City with your office downtown since 2007, right?
Right, right.
How has the organization evolved? What is the NAIA today?
Yeah, you know, it's an organization that's about character-driven intercollegiate athletics, and we talked a little bit about it before, and Larry put it well, that our student athletes are going to school to get an education first, but they also want to continue to do something they love. They have the opportunity to continue to play sports, and so we try to capture that through our Champions of Character program. But I think one of the things that, even though it is small college athletics, and we talk about when people come down to municipal auditorium, they get a chance to be up close with the student athletes. It is a very large organization, almost 300 institutions across the country. We have 60,000 student athletes that compete in 23 national championships. Larry did say that most student athletes are on partial scholarships, but that adds up to about $500 million in athletic aid that our institutions provide. So it's a very large organization with a lot of sports. Of course, here in Kansas City, it's known for the basketball tournament. But we just continue to try to provide opportunities for kids to do the things they love.
And one of the big new initiatives, according to the timeline on your website, is the Eligibility Center opening up. What is that?
Yeah, we opened that up a couple of years ago, and to try to make it a short story. But prior to the Eligibility Center, if you wanted to compete in the NAIA, say you wanted to play tennis at Baker University, you would go to Baker and provide your materials, your transcript and your test scores, and Baker would decide whether you're eligible or not. Now, each prospective student athlete, anyone who is new to the NAIA, has to come through the Eligibility Center. So one determination is made, and that applies to all NAIA schools. And if you're coming straight from high school, it's a pretty easy determination. But if you're an international student or if you've transferred, especially gone to a few different schools, we had some uneven application of our rules, but now it's very consistent. And the thing that I'm most excited about, it also gives us a great platform to go out to the high school community and tell whether it's people in the AAU or the 50 state activities associations around the country, this is what it takes to become eligible in the NAIA. And while we're doing that, we can also promote our other programs and talk about the great things going on.
Let's talk to Cora on line one. She's calling from Clinton. Cora, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I was calling because my father, Frank Douglas, I used to live in Parkville, rather. Frank Douglas was coach of Western Baptist Seminary back in those days, and he was the first black team to win a Missouri State Championship. They didn't have the little divisions in those days. But he, being a college classmate of Art Bergstrom, took his three little girls to each of those championship tournaments. And we would go with him, not really understanding why, but we would go with him, and you know, I met Art Bergstrom several times because of that gathering that would happen. And as you know, blacks were not allowed to sit in the lower levels. We had to sit way up in the back areas. And but invariably, my dad was always very involved in whatever team was playing. And being, you know, the coach of a small school, he was able to really help us understand the significance that these little teams could come and actually have an even chance.
Wow, that's a great story, Cora. Thanks so much for calling in. It's good to hear from you.
Thank you.
So, Greg Eklin, you've looking back on the tournaments you've seen, do you think there's sort of an enduring place for the NAIA and for this part of the athletic world?
Oh, sure, there is. I mean, when Larry mentioned from the outset of this segment that there are, in the early stages of the tournament, 8 games in one day. I mean, there are some basketball junkies out there who will sit through all 8 games. So there's something unique about this tournament, and that's one facet. But there are a lot of unique, really interesting, appealing facets of the NAIA basketball tournament that makes it a good fit for Kansas City.
We had an email from Dennis who says he's a graduate of William Jewell College. He always appreciated the values of the NAIA. He regrets that Jewell decided to go the route of the NCAA, Division II. There are many reasons for that regret, he says, but he's always felt that the NAIA does emphasize the concept of the student athlete far more than its big brother. And of course, I think that is probably one of the real questions for the future of the NAIA, isn't it? What schools decide to stay with the NAIA? What might decide to go Division II, Division III in the NCAA?
Yeah, and as people know, the landscape is changing dramatically before us in all of collegiate sports. And so I really think there's going to be a great opportunity for the NAIA. There currently is, but I think we're going to see a separation of the larger schools in the NCAA and going to move off and do their own thing. And so the NAIA is well placed to be there to continue to do what we've always done, but in a much bigger way.
That's Jim Carr, president and CEO of the NAIA. Larry Lady is with us as well, the commissioner of officials and of the Heart of America Athletic Conference. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
KCUR's Greg Eklund. Who's going to win tonight, Georgetown or Southwestern Assemblies of God University?
Well, I'm going to go with the first-time participant. So
going with Segu.
Segu.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. We were also joined earlier by Kathy Nelson of the Kansas City Sports Commission. Join us tomorrow as we examine the precarious state of Kansas City middle schools. And stay tuned now for Up to Date, which will take a look at various myths surrounding unions. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with help from Suzanne Hogan. Harvard University's fight song. I think they might win on Thursday at 8:50 when they play the University of New Mexico. I'm Brian Ellison, and this is Central Standard.